guy, they get fries anyway.
Dave, do we understand your position correctly now? You're willing for any municipal ordinance, regardless what's in it, to be called an offense,
right,
even though it's treated in every other respect exactly like a crime?
Guy can be put in jail for it.
Right.
Fine.
That's cool. But don't take the next step further away from that ridiculous situation and say, now you create crime.
Well, I'm not so sure yours isn't a ridiculous
position. Yeah, what's so ridiculous?
Ridiculous like you in the eye of the ridicule.
In the eye of the ridicule.
Yeah, right.
Do we understand it, Foy? Call the roll on Mr. Frost's motion.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Sandra Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
No.
Chandler?
No.
Frost?
Aye.
Paz?
Aye.
Drinstead?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Knight?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Oh, I see.
Young wants to say no.
Hey, where's Don Clark? Is there a motion now to adopt Section 1?
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Call the roll. Section 1.
Say, where you been, Bob? I haven't seen you lately.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Sandra Burns?
No.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Frost?
No.
Hodge?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Carried. Section 2.
This would have a retroactive effect, I assume. Every existing ordinance would become a crime upon the adoption of this.
Dave, be a good
one. I'm just asking.
It would be.
Yeah, I suppose we probably should make it, put something in legislative history about that to help ease the burden of the court. How about that? If the code becomes effective July 1, '71, does it retroactively make all city ordinances that are in existence at that time crimes?
In other words, is every man who has filled out a questionnaire and said he has not been convicted of a crime, should he now lie retroactively?
And I've prepared a section which we will get to tomorrow, as a matter of fact, on
sure,
organization of the code. As to the application of the code.
Well, will it answer the question Dave has raised now?
Yes, I think it will.
And what is that answer?
I don't know.
You were filled out a form 3 years ago, and it wasn't a crime, and today it is a crime. It wasn't a crime when you were convicted.
Don't break even that.
It could make
you're straining, David. Violation of the same ordinance you were convicted of before. It's now a crime.
You'd be willing to defend a guy, though.
It could make a big difference in a personal injury case where the court permitted somebody to be impeached.
We're talking, we're going to, and we've agreed to change.
All right, but are we going to make it retroactive when we change it? Let's put a declaration in our word.
I have conduct criminal.
Not if it was between consenting adults.
I have proposed a section called application of provisions.
All right, Don's,
which I think answers the question. It appears in your book under the last, well.
Shall we listen to see what Don has to say here, please?
Under our draft on preliminary provisions. We have application of provisions, page 11 of that draft, section 5. It's under your last red tab before you get to the first blue tab. And it says provisions of this act shall govern the construction of and punishment for any offense defined in this act and committed after the effective date hereof, as well as the construction and application of any defense to a prosecution for such an offense. Except otherwise expressly provided, or unless the conduct required otherwise, provisions of this act shall govern the construction of and punishment for any offense defined outside this act and committed after the effective date hereof, as well as the construction and application of any defense to a prosecution for such an offense. The provisions of this act shall not apply to or govern the construction of and punishment for any offense committed before the effective date of this act or the construction application of any defense or prosecution of such offense. Such an offense shall be construed and punished according to the law existing at the time of the commission of the offense in the same manner as if this act had not been enacted.
Don has retroactively answered Dave's current question.
Yeah.
I have one more question.
All right.
Making them prime, then, I would assume that it would be impossible for a city to require placing the 3 feet if it's not then returned. Since it is conviction of crime that has been shown by the city, it's not a crime by jury.
Wally Carson is running this.
Probably right.
That's a darn good reason for voting the way I didn't vote.
Judge, Don, do you wish to attend that
question? I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I couldn't hear the question.
The question was, as I understand it at least, that after this goes into effect, the cities will no longer be able to require the deposit of a jury fee, since it's a crime. Conduct sanctioned, not sanctioned.
Number of jury trials requested for the court.
Could I have your reasoning again?
Well, it's my understanding that the reason they've been able to justify the required jury deposit for this one, the trial is a violation, is not a crime as such, it's a violation. Now we're making it a crime.
Well, we can call it a violation.
Well, give the right to trial by jury.
Well, but the right to trial by jury goes down that line of time.
Now, if you're right.
Under the present United States Supreme Court decision.
Dave, if you are right, then, how is it, if they're not crimes now, that a jury trial can be demanded?
Statute.
No, the statute is adopted for to cover that situation.
Well, it's the constitutional right.
Dave, you don't think the court is going to decide on this question. Court is going to call the city ordinance anything else than a crime, if they're going to decide that the right exists.
It's my understanding, I can't be wrong, my understanding that the courts have copped out of this question by saying no, it is not a crime. It doesn't fall under the purview of a crime because it's our same little artificial distinction. But if we take that cop out away from it, and if that is the barrier,
I got something to tell you about this afternoon. Interesting development.
I don't know the answer, but it's a practical question, which results in only precipitous action taken by this committee.
I imagine that the only way it can really be resolved is for somebody to take that question up. Because it seems to me, regardless of what you call it, if at the present time the courts have held that the defendant is entitled to a jury trial, even though it's not called a crime, they'll carry the same distinction on through as to what you say and say, well, wherever they call it, they're not
the present statute, 221.349 says, in all prosecutions for any crime or offense defined in the punishment of any city charter or ordinance, defendants have the right to trial by jury. This subsection,
the reason that was passed is because I remember the debate, the Supreme Court's going to do it anyway, remember?
They're going to look at whether it's a loss of liberty situation.
Right. Yeah.
The guy's going to jail, he can have a drink, he isn't going to jail.
There's a loss of liberty, they're going to call it crime or not.
That's right. And that's why this statute was enacted. Because the legislature felt, in all the debates, that the Supreme Court's going to require this anyway. If there's a possible loss of liberty under the ordinance with which the man is charged. That's right. Let's finish section 2 if we can, and then recess for lunch. The motion on section two.
Mr. Chairman, may I have section two explained again in the light of the objection of George Flatford?
Got it.
Is that a fair question to ask?
I think you.
Well, you mean whether or not a political subdivision of the state in passing an ordinance that carries imprisonment has created a misdemeanor? That's your question?
Yeah.
I would say yes, they would have created a misdemeanor. But they would not be able to send a man to the penitentiary, so it couldn't be a felony.
Well, the way you've got three written, you
know, anyway. Well, but two.
You said a felony is a statute of this state.
Two says any offense which carries imprisonment is a crime if it's so defined by state statute. Where does that leave a city ordinance which carries imprisonment?
It's a crime.
How about a city ordinance? How about a city ordinance is provided for a penalty of 2 years?
Well, the reason that I have trouble understanding it is that that we say in one that if it's a city ordinance or a state statute and it carries either imprisonment or a fine, it's an offense. Then we come down and we say it's a crime.
Under this, under Part 3, it doesn't seem that the way it's written that you've got to have that a city could provide it 2 years.
Because yes, under 5...
Yeah, the city could. I don't see anything that limits the city. I think you're going to have to change the word...
Or to and.
Or to and in subsection 3.
Well, I think they ought to be able to.
The city could have...
Oh, yeah.
I beg your pardon.
I don't think that. Defined felony in section 3.
I withdraw my question. I'm looking at the old draft. The old draft.
I move we adjourn. We're in recess until 1:30.
Does anyone want to go down to the bar luncheon?
Or either one of you, or a combination.
I believe Judge Burns withdrew his inquiry.
I was looking at the wrong one. I apologize.
Well,
I'll apologize again.
I'm moving to approve section 2.
Question.
Call the roll on the approval of section 2, quickly.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Jernstedt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Young? Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Chairman, I would move with respect to section 3, the word or be deleted, the word and substituted.
Which line?
Third line.
I see.
Otherwise, I think that we would be in effect authorizing the city.
Create a felony.
Create a felony.
By ordinance.
No, it's all right.
Mr. Blow, designated in any statute of this state.
Or, if a person thereof may be sentenced to a maximum, what happens if the city of Corvallis says that shoplifting is a 2-year sentence? They created a felony.
Convicted thereof. Thereof.
What is thereof?
Thereof means statute of this state.
And I think you need the or in there because we do have statutes now on the books throughout ORS, which doesn't say this crime's a felony, it just says what the punishment is. And if the punishment is more than a year in penitentiary or imprisonment, then it becomes a felony. And I think it needs to be disjunct.
Wait a minute, Don. Isn't the definition of felony?
If you're satisfied that thereof refers to clause, a crime of a felony if it's already designated in any statute of the state.
I'm certain that is.
Well, now, wait a minute. What is the thereof defined?
Statute of the state.
I don't think it does. It's not that clear to me.
A person thereof refers to crime. Person convicted of that kind of crime. Well,
crime, that's the point. I don't think it defines thereof refers to this.
Well, it has to refer to statute also, because it's a crime is a felony. When is it a felony? If it is so designated in the statute of the state.
Or.
That's
or,
right.
Or
if
a person
convicted thereof.
Of a crime.
Of a crime or of a statute.
A crime is defined as anything which is city ordinance, all right.
Well, maybe Ann would help it some.
No, it wouldn't, no. No, because that means that you're going to have both in every statute in order to make it a felony, and I don't think we want to
all
do
right,
that.
How about saying, instead of saying thereof, how about substituting convicted
of such
of a crime defined by statute of the state, of this state, or convicted of an offense you've got to make it refer to a state statute.
Well, that's what I've done.
No, you haven't, Don.
It's so designated, or if a person convicted thereof.
Thereof only refers to the word crime, Don, and crime you define to include an ordinance, right?
Why don't we preserve
for a moment of silence, Don?
What were you going to tell him about what Gracie's two main attributes?
I did.
Oh,
he
told
him. He felt pretty bad.
Well,
last 10 seconds.
How about this? Striking the word thereof and putting it in the words of a violation of a statute of this state.
Two will be satisfactory.
All right, I'll amend my motion, Mr. Chairman, at least my earlier motion, and I'll move that the word thereof be stricken, and the new thereof be insert the words of a violation of the statute of the state.
Well, why it says convicted, why it say violation, or if a person convicted of a statute of this state?
Convicted of a violation of a statute, yeah.
All right, we've heard the well, now Don's going to say something else.
Well, I don't want to use the word violation to avoid it, because we've used that as a term of art. We've defined violation. I think it's going to be confusing to put violation in there. How about you convicted under a statute? This state.
Oh, all right.
Of an offense.
All right. I'll
go offense for everybody.
I'll make it under a statute of this state.
Don, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it's better.
You think it's
not good?
You mean it's better than this as originally written?
No.
Or better than what the earlier suggested?
It's better than his first suggestion.
Can you live with that?
Oh, yes, I can.
Fine. You've heard the motion. Any further discussion?
Please.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carry. Johnson wins again after two withdrawals.
We approve.
I did not
three.
Use the word withdrawal. How does this, in the second part of the list, there may be such a maximum more than one here, how will that work in regard to our, I think in terms of the marijuana situation where it could be a felony or a misdemeanor based upon the sentence imposed rather than what
Yeah, right. Well, we deal with that.
Section 9.
we deal with that, and that's the reason I incorporated except as provided in section 9 of this article. That refers to section 9, which gives the court some other alternatives, and there the crime is, the classification is determined by the punishment that's inflicted or imposed. The punishment that's imposed will determine.
That conflicts with section.
No, it doesn't. I don't think so.
This defines a felony as a...
Except that provided in section 9.
And then the section...
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry.
See, section 9 picks up that kind of an offense, where it's what we would call now the indictable misdemeanor.
You ready to vote on section 3 as amended? Call the roll.
Ms. Burns?
Aye.
Carson? Chandler?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Hobbs?
Aye.
Grinstead?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Carry. Section 4.
All right, section 4 then sets up four grades of felonies, A, B, C, which will be in our code. The unclassified felonies are felonies that are outside of this code, but because the sentence provided fall within our definition of felony. It's an unclassified felony, and our code does not control the penalty in those non-criminal code sections. And the reason under sub 2 that there are two blanks, those would refer finally in our final draft to the number that we assign to our murder section and treason. Those are two crimes that that the grading subcommittee decided should be punishable by life imprisonment. So we have treated those separately from the others. They are felonies, but they're not in any of these classifications.
Couldn't call them double A.
Well, we could, but we thought it might be better not to.
Well, by reason of jurisdiction of the courts, Don says that they can't impose the penalty or imprisonment anymore. Okay. Sounds, seems fairly simple and logical in section 4.
Will we approve section 4?
We've heard the motion. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Don, with reference to section 5, do we have a little inconsistency with the Dave problem?
Same thing that we took care of section 3.
But we have nothing, no reference in here, you see, to the municipal ordinance.
Leave the language here the same.
Well, of course, here, your municipal court would have the power to send somebody to prison or to jail.
Oh, that's right. It's all
up to
or,
a year.
Or at the person.
I move the adoption of 5.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Section 6.
All right.
Approve section 6.
Same explanation obtained. Any further discussion?
I am the only class C is
the your proper question?
Well, just to ask, I know, for example, going back to chapter 449, that's a statute which we just define the crime as a misdemeanor. I'm sure we'll be limited to class 5.
Well, but the legislature can change those if they want to.
That's right.
But it'd be up to the legislature to do so.
Well, yeah, the legislature is presently made the misdemeanors of the subject of presently they're class A.
Or B.
No, no, they're class. This is the statute which just says the violation of this act is a misdemeanor.
Well, it's class A.
Under present law, it'd be class A.
So we're reducing all class A misdemeanors to class C, but those that do say that maximum of 6 months, we're leaving there.
Yeah, or the ones that say a year, we'd leave there. But if they don't say what it is, then you have to have some way to relate to what the punishment's going to be.
Well, that's a fairly, if the legislature hasn't seen fit to say what it is, it's obviously they don't think it's very important.
No, they feel it deserves up to a year now.
No, actually, it's a matter of good draftsmanship that the legislature should have treated both of them instead of ever.
But because they're saying now, we're the maximum of the year.
Well, yeah, but if they say now, all right.
But because the legislature, at the time they passed an act, felt that it was should be less than a misdemeanor and put in a specific penalty, we're saying that that now is a greater crime than what they consider should have been a year.
Well, it isn't too much of a job. I think
that's right. Grade them up, the DRA.
Tell you, the legislative council has something to do with it now, expanding.
Well, most of those are statutes that are in particular areas that endeavor anyway, and they'll be in here.
Plus, the legislature would have the benefit, once this is adopted, of having a well-formulated outline of what each of these is going to be, and they would be able to presumably slug each crime into where they want it to go, if they want to. I mean, if you've got a statute, say, in 449, there's nothing to prevent the legislature from saying this is a Class A misdemeanor. They want to do it.
Is there a call for the question?
Question.
Call the roll.
Judge Brinn.
Aye.
Carson. Chandler.
Aye.
Frost.
Aye.
Hawes. Jernstein.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Carried. Section 7.
Well, that's just the definition of violation.
Motion has been made. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Section 8.
This picks up the ones that were, if it's punishable as provided under 7, it's considered a violation if it's outside of our code. If it just provides a civil forfeiture or a fine only, then it would be considered a violation.
Let me ask you a question here. Does this mean that if it's outside the code and punishable only by a fine, it's a violation?
Yes.
Well, where do you pick up that if it's outside the code, that fine could be different, couldn't it?
$5,000 fine.
Sure, but even though the fine is different than what we specify for a violation, it would still come under Section 7 if it's punishable only by a fine. Fine and forfeiture, etc. It would still be considered a violation, although it might have a tremendously high fine attached to it.
I move we adopt Section 8.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It is carried unanimously. Now, Section 9.
All right, here we're. This is intended to cover the indictable, the so-called indictable misdemeanor type offense. And even though it's punishable as a felony, and this would get into our Class C felony structure, and you'll see that as we get into this next article. If the court does any of the things that are set out under subsection 2, then the crime is a misdemeanor. Otherwise, it would be a felony.
There's a felony of no sentencing. That the court either puts them in a county jail or grants probation or a fine.
It's classed as a misdemeanor if the court imposes a punishment other than imprisonment.
Move to approve Section 9.
Any discussion? We battled this one around for a long, long time and covered every possible contingency we felt.
Didn't undoubtedly you did. Once earlier in the commission sometimes?
We talked it in subcommittee, yes. This originally came from early draft and classes of crimes that we talked about in I think Judge Brooks' subcommittee.
I can remember.
Yeah. Now this does carry a. It does give the court a new option that it doesn't have now, and that's the discharge of the defendant.
Are you ready for a question? Call the roll.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Dender Burns.
Aye.
Parker.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Frost.
Aye.
Hawes.
Aye.
Jernstead.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye.
Now, Mr. Chairman, we moved fast enough the last 10 minutes to get rid of this threat of a night meeting.
Well, I don't know yet.
Night meeting
with? Fight on, man.
We don't get through with our
tonight.
Our schedule today. We'll have to in order to get through tomorrow.
That's why we've been moving so fast the last 5 minutes. You threatened that.
That wasn't a threat. It was simply a
statement
of fact.
That's what? A threat.
I know that every member of this commission is certainly anxious to complete everything we have in our agenda.
Move we approve Article 8.
No, it's an Article 10.
Article 8, authorized disposition of offenders.
Right now.
So you want to have some unauthorized dispositions?
Convicted criminals.
I thought it was kind of classy.
You want to have to deal with people who ain't offenders?
Authorized.
You have mine.
Oh, yes. We have it back in the book. No, it's in here.
No,
it's back.
It's third, fifth red tab.
From the back.
Theft? No.
Just above theft amendment.
Yeah, amendment.
Section 1 of Article 8. It's that.
Now, where does that go in? Where does the Johnson, so called Johnson, go in?
It goes in with Article 14 behind it.
Well, it would have to go in. Now, you see.
Go to this section 2.
Well, here's the thing. The draft is drafted originally for subcommittee purposes, and the way it appears now in preliminary draft 2, we don't amend 137, 120. In other words, we leave the indeterminate sentence the way it is. So this would, we'd have to put in a new section under Article 8 to amend that particular statute, since we're not doing it, because we, the original draft didn't propose any change in the determined sentence statute itself. We refer to it in our sections before we get to the authorized maximum, because we say in the authorized sentence an indeterminate sentence of not more than. So for example, Section 3, the maximum term of an indeterminate sentence of imprisonment for a felony is as follows, and we say what it is. But in using that language, indeterminate sentence, that contemplated indeterminate sentence as it now exists in the present statute. This draft... So it would just be, it could go in there, there's no problem, it's just the way we place it.
Wouldn't it be,
if you use all your old cliches about being the best comedian in the world?
Chairman, wouldn't it be, it would seem to me that we ought to resolve this issue before we get into Section 2.
Whether they want to follow the California or Washington system.
Yeah.
Don, that might be a good idea.
Yeah.
Why don't you start that way?
And I might mention that two gentlemen who are here may want to comment on this. I think that's specifically the main thing they're interested in.
Well, let's get the discussion going for this commission, and then if we feel
all right,
we want to hear from them, we will.
Okay. Now, to the subcommittee members, after we had met on this, following the, I don't know, maybe you'd rather discuss this, but anyway, we had a meeting at Mr. Johnson's office, and Senator Burns had, following our meeting, Sal Shan requested a legislative fiscal office to give us some estimate on what effect this would have on costs of administering the corrections program if we adopted the so-called indeterminate sentence, which there would be no judge fixed maximum. In other words, the court would sentence the defendant to the maximum provided by statute for that crime. And then it would be up to the parole authorities to set the maximum after he's been taken into the corrections process. So we discussed this at Mr. Johnson's office, and Mr. Galvin sat in on that discussion. We had two individuals from the Legislative Fiscal Office. And as a result of that meeting, I drafted this proposed amendment, which attempts to do what came out of that meeting. One was to provide for no judge fixed maximum, but to provide that the court would make a recommendation within 60 days after committing the defendant to the custody of the Corrections Division, make a recommendation as to when the defendant should be paroled. The parole authorities would not be prohibited from paroling sooner than that if it was otherwise authorized by law. But if they did not parole at that time, or before that time, then they would be required to advise the court. Now, the discussion that took place at the meeting in Mr. Johnson's office contemplated an informal arrangement here. In other words, this would not be a matter that would be filed with the court by corrections, nor are there any appeals written in here for an inmate who's denied parole at the time suggested by the court. It would contemplate that it would, in fact, require the court, however, to make this recommendation, and it would require the parole board to advise the court in writing if it did not subscribe to the court's recommendations. There's one other section, the last section, on page 3 of the amendment, deals with another matter, really. We talked about it at our subcommittee meeting, question of consecutive and concurrent terms of imprisonment. this is a little different than California has an indeterminate sentence in which there's no judge fixed maximum. The state of Washington has one. The state of Hawaii. Now, there may be some others. These are the only ones that we know of for sure. But this is a little different, but I think the effect might be the same, except that it does not pin down the parole board to set the term to be served by a definite period of time. In other words, I think California, they're required within 60 days, I think. 120.
I wonder, maybe I can remember the issues first. Well, I remember that about the second meeting we had, Mr. Rubin came from Saul Rubin. And he was very strong with this idea that the judge ought to sentence to a maximum.
That's right.
And thereafter that the State Corrections Division or Parole Board or whatever was handling it.
And that's the action that the majority of the subcommittee took. And then Lee came in and wanted what was so-called pure indeterminate sentence, in which the judge, the district attorney, and the sheriff.
Majority of the subcommittee involved.
Yes, wasn't it? Don?
Senator Burns and I were on one side, two other members were on the other, and Representative Carson was
wavering.
Well, let's say this, the minutes reflect that a majority...
I move that we rescind the action by which we approve the minutes.
I think we ought to lay the issue out. The issue is this. In the present law, the judge sets the maximum. The alternative approach is one of these would be California, which says that the judge, of course, has the power to put the man on probation, has the power to suspend sentence, also has the power to discharge. But if the man is to be sentenced to prison, he is then sentenced to an indeterminate sentence, which is determined by the parole board. Some people tend to think that, and this is why I usually have some people there that much about this and anybody else. I'm not convinced that you have to set a maximum sentence at that time anyway. Still have a statutory maximum. It seems to me those are essentially the alternative. I don't think anyone is suggesting that we take away from the judge the power to put a man on probation, suspend, discharge.
But that's at the time of sentencing. This is not the ability of the judge to come in 6 months after the guy's been sent down here to Salem or over here to Salem or up here to Salem or wherever you are. And then change
the main thing. The main difference between a California system and what the committee's draft presently stands is that the judge sets the maximum that it can be there.
California, they're sentenced to the state adult authority for
right.
For
the maximum prescribed by statute.
Yeah. Right. Subject to the statutory maximum. And I don't think anybody's disagreeing that we want to do away with the statutory maximum. I don't think there's any issue there. The real issue is I think where the difference of opinion lies is whether the judge should have the power to set a maximum within that range.
Well, I understand.
For example, for a Class B felony is 10 years. We're going to go to the judge or to the adult authority in the parole board to set the maximum within that period. I think that's the basic issue. One other thing about this amendment, which has another feature in it, which is a compromise, not a political compromise, but a compromise that I think has some very definite practical significance. And that it does provide for the judge, he shall make a recommendation for parole. And the purpose of that is that there has been some experience with the parole board that they tend to get bureaucratic and they get very conservative and they get concerned about springing these guys loose too soon. This gives them a backup that if they become that attitude. As a practical matter, they're going to have to take an affirmative action to extend beyond that period the judge recommended.
As I remember Mr. Rubin's discussion, he was not asking for judge sentenced to the maximum, but to a maximum within the maximum.
Well, that's the Oregon law now.
That's right. Yeah. He recommended retention of the judge fixed
portion,
maximum.
Yeah. Which could be less than the statutory maximum. Right.
The arguments in favor, I think the strongest argument in favor of indeterminate sentences, I'm strongly in favor of it, is the problem of disparity. That 70 judges, circuit judges in the state. I think any fair study of the results, all of the lot, isn't because of individuals.
If you go to California,
70 different individuals.
Well, there's still a lot of disparity down there. And this is I understand people down there.
Well, I do think one thing is not totally fair, because we are improving a lot here by the very sentencing structure we've built into this revised code is much better. Much of the criticism of California's system is that its present sentencing structure, period, and then statutory sentencing structure, which is all of it, is even worse, I think, than Oregon's present.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me interject, Lee. In the subcommittee, and we talked about the division that there was within the subcommittee, as I recall, there were two of us who felt that the sentencing structure should be set up so that the court would sentence the defendant to an indeterminate period not to exceed the maximum. In other words, that if it's a Class B felony, the court sentences the guy to 10 years and leaves it up to the adult authority to fix the ultimate duration of the sentence. There were two who felt that we should retain the present law and let it be a judge-fixed maximum. And I think one of the members was kind of on the fence.
Now, thank you for being cunning.
I was going to say it's like that subcommittee one that Tony referred a bill to last session that came back, couldn't report back to the judiciary because the subcommittee was tied.
Couldn't agree.
Now we've got him wavering on the fence.
Well, but here's what I've been a party to these discussions by correspondence that have been going on, and I think I know where the corrections division stands and know where legislative fiscal stands and what the cost factor is. And I feel really that the cost factor is such that it's not legislatively feasible to go to a true indeterminate sentencing procedure such as they have in California and Washington. So I suppose that modifies me from where I was at Salishan. The question that I have, and I want to direct it to Lee, is I don't see really where this recommendation by the trial judge, it has no teeth in it, does it? Because the parole board isn't bound to follow that recommendation. And I wonder, since it has no, it's advisory only, I wonder if we should be putting things like that into our statute. And the second thing, perhaps George Platt would like to speak to that, I don't know. The second thing is, my experience has been that after the judge has sentenced a defendant, he commences to get all kinds of pressure on him. And I wonder, is want to direct this to Judge Burns and ask him if he thinks the trial judge is going to be...
He has three separate people to comment on the same thing.
No. Two different things. You think you're going to be in a better position within 60 days after the sentence to make a recommendation as to parole than you would be at the time of sentence?
No.
You will have forgotten all about it?
Well, what's wrong
all right, that's
with,
no.
I'm lost somewhere along here. What's wrong with what doing what Reuben suggested we do?
That's what we have now.
Yeah, what's wrong with it?
We have a tremendous disparity in sentencing.
Well, what we have
that 70 different individuals.
That's right.
Apply each of their own subjective standards.
That's right.
No question a board has the same kind of problem that 70 individuals, but at least you have one board that's making applying the same subjective
standards. Well, Lee, I don't think that's quite a fair statement. It's fair, I don't mean it in that sense, but actually, as far as this disparity is concerned, we have inherently taken care of a great deal of much of that problem by our classification and, by and large, the reduction of the term of years in our sentencing classifications. That's number one. Number two is, although we have 70 different judges in this state, the disparity isn't spread among all these 70. By and large, the great majority of the judges in our state are treating these pretty darn well and realistically. There may be a few who get a little over enthusiastic, others perhaps too lenient, but the relatively few that brings about this disparity. But if you adopt what you want, you're going to do away with the power that the judge has today, which I think that he should have, plus you're going to eliminate the value of his knowledge of the background of that defendant, his personal examination of the trial of that particular case, his seeing this defendant, and he has the benefit of the pre-sentence investigation and report, so no one is in a better position initially to form a judgment on this thing. And if he does sentence the man to the corrections division, the parole board still has the authority that it has today. It will have the authority that you want it to have. And in addition to that, these 70 judges all have the same general type of background and experience. And they're not only knowledgeable in the law, but they have the same type of background experience that qualifies them. Whereas on a parole board, and I'm not saying anything against them, but you have perhaps a psychiatrist, a lawyer, several laymen, and what is there to say that you won't find the same disparity within a more limited degree because of our classifications that we have here by a parole board than you will among the judges? And in addition to that, the judge will have to be sending a statement of the background and the history of this fellow. The sheriff will have to do it. The district attorney has to do it. You're going to be duplicating some effort. And all in all, I don't think
you're
that there's enough to be gained.
Because in the first place, corrections department employees provide most of the information. The judge applies it to the trial. How much attention do you pay to the recommendation of the DA? Most judges don't, in Multnomah County, they don't even.
Well, why is it in here then? Why do you have why'd you have it put in that your amendment?
I'm saying that just from the standpoint of information, from the information sources, they have the same information sources as the judge, other than the personal observation of the trial.
True.
I think there is one other argument that I forgot to advance, which is important. It seems to me in corrections that it's better to look from hindsight rather than foresight as to what disposition should be made with an offender. They're working with the offender in the correction setting, not in the setting right after the trial. Trying to determine what is the best way to either rehabilitate or to dispose of this offender.
Now the judge is going to have the right to suspend the imposition of sentence, to place on probation.
I would also very much disagree with you over the question of disparity. Sorry that I'm not able to provide the county DA before this together when we didn't get it down. We have been trying to pull together just figures, for example, on armed robbery, compare those against the pre-sentence report. Taking this as one typical crime, it's going to be right within one judicial district, a tremendous amount of disparity that exists.
Don't they use the panel system in Multnomah County now?
This is the experience that I have gotten from discussion, not from first-hand experience, but from discussion from attorneys both on the prosecution and the defense side, that it is almost impossible for them to guess how anyone who has come out of the case.
Well, the only cases where you have this problem at all, what percentage of the cases do the judges in Multnomah County grant probation of one sort or suspend the imposition of sentence or the execution of sentence, etc.?
Those figures are hard to come by, Tony. Statewide,
roughly half?
Statewide, the figures are about 60%.
Probation. All right. If there is 60%, you're only talking about the other 40%. And if we didn't have...
You're talking about the guys we spend the most money on.
Yes. Don't we have a statute that says that they must serve a third of their term before they're eligible? That's a policy. If we don't have that...
The board used to follow, and I understand they're trying to get away from it.
All right. Now, the error, I imagine, is that the harshness of the sentence initially, and then the parole board having to make the determination, following the policy that they have, well, this man gets 6 years, he has to wait 2 years before we can act upon it. If there's no statute to that effect, and if the judge has been too harsh, what is to prevent them from saying, in 6 months, he's eligible for parole?
Well, Tony, you know, I've made this argument before, but the thing that really persuaded me to the indeterminate sentence was the exact inverse of the example you give, and it was a case where a guy was...
too little.
Who was sentenced to a year in the OCI from the Dalles for assault with a dangerous weapon, and I talked to the psychologist there after he had been released and had committed a murder. And he said, the guy served flat time, he had psychological problems, we didn't have enough time to work with him. We knew we were that if he were released, that he'd probably go out and commit a murder. And we had him lined up to go outpatient to the University of Oregon Medical School Hospital in Portland. He refused to do it. We couldn't commit him to the mental hospital. He was released. Within about 2 months, he kills a woman and puts her body in the trunk of a Mustang car, and he's arrested up in Pendleton the next day. And it's a famous case in Portland. Now, if we'd had an indeterminate sentence law there, and he had gotten a 10-year maximum, and they had had the time with which to work on him, they told me that they could have put him back on the street when he was safe for society, and that murder would have been avoided. And so that's the inverse of the harshness thing, and the real reason why I was persuaded, however many years ago, to look at this.
There's the guy who comes in the 2 year, who's given the 2 year maximum, says, I'm just going to write it out. I'm not going to think it's, even if I didn't make a big job, I'm going to get out of 18 months anyway. And, I'll just write out the 2 years and be a general pain in the ass on here. Because he knows at the end of the 2 years he's got to be sprung. They've got no way to hold him in.
Well, it's human to err, and certainly a judge can do it. But nothing has convinced me that the parole board is going to err as well. And they may, you don't know when these psychological disturbances are going to appear.
The parole board is not going to err. Anybody who would say otherwise would be ridiculous. But I think it is somewhat different to have 70 different guys applying their own individual standards. And I do not think the judges all come from the same background by any means. We can take here, this room is all full of lawyers, and I think we've got most of them. Substantial number of lawyers, excuse me, and I think our own attitudes towards sentencing would be considerably disparate.
Well, I think the whole difference is whether we wish to place our initially place our confidence in the judge to make the determination or to have a parole board.
Chairman,
there's
only one thing I would like to ask. If we couldn't here.
Well, let's see if other members of the commission have anything to say first.
Dave. Oh, excuse me, if I go get a cup of coffee.
As a theoretical matter, I would very much prefer the so-called cure indeterminate sentence. If it's not possible, it would seem to me that you break sentencing down into three basic parts. The first is the decision as to probation or not. I think the trial judge is in the best position to make that determination because it's based upon prior events. Because a pre-sentence report, he's seen the defendant testify, he knows the facts of the case, he knows the prior record, he makes a determination of whether it should be probation. The second question is whether or not it's a lengthy sentence. And this is where disparity comes in. And I assume and told, I don't know it may be true, that there is disparity in sentencing no matter what we say. The cattle rustlers are from Eastern Oregon, so they get more time than the guy in Multnomah County or Washington County, probably. The third question, this gets Lee's suggestion, the third question to be decided is when he's to be paroled. And that's based upon what he's done from the time of sentencing to the time of release. And that's far outside the trial judge's area of knowledge. He doesn't even know. And for the trial judge to say, I believe this is going to happen in 3 years from now, he should be released on parole, I think is illogical. He doesn't have the facts to make that determination. And that's where the determination should be made by the parole board on the basis of how well the guy has adjusted, what kind of a job he's done, what his possibilities are for rehabilitation. So my thought is, if we can't go to a pure indeterminate sentencing, which I would like, I would prefer to say where we are right now. And that's, I think, pretty much what these three stages are. We think there's a lot of...
That's right.
And I didn't ask a single question anyway. It's all great.
No. Anyone else on the commission wish to say anything?
I'd like to speak just Judge briefly Burns. To Lee's suggestion. In the first place, disparity is a problem partly because the guy inside thinks it's a problem. And he finds that the fellow next to him is from Coos County and he's got 5 years and he's sitting there 10 years and he isn't aware
and doesn't take the trouble to find out that the guy from Coos County had a totally different background, history, and so on. And therefore, one or the other immediately jumps to the conclusion that there's severe disparity in sentence, when there might not be at all. It continues to be a problem, because as long as they think it's a problem, it is harmful to their rehabilitation prospect, because they spend time being mad at the judge or the parole board or whoever, instead of looking toward their own rehabilitation. Secondly,